And welcome back to the show. Once again, I'm your host, Soli. We're here to solidify another amazing topic. Couldn't do it by myself, so I assembled True North Nerds host, Brent Chittenden. How are you, buddy?
I am very good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And he's got a kill. I know anyone, no one else can see this, but he's got a killer action figure collection. I wish I had. Yeah, you got some anime there. You got Darth Vader clearly in the far right, and you got some dinosaurs. I just had some movie maniacs, and
they're in another room. Actually, I've got a couple of those kicking
so
around.
You got too. All the Candymans and Wishmasters and aliens and predators. Gotcha. glad to have you here on the show. And we were going back and forth. I always pick the guest's topic, and more than half the time, it's like a topic I already wanted to talk about. And boom, there it is. Light in the dark.
Sweet.
We decided to go into the Tube Way Army Master himself, Gary Numan. Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting because we both watched a documentary that the BBC did.
Yeah, 2016. There was a documentary about him. It used to be on Amazon. This time I had to go for the bowels of the internet to find a download and send it to Brent so he could prep. And
yeah.
He is a new wave, synth pop, new romantic, alternative dance, and alternative indie rock industrial musician, writer, and performer who is had so many 80s hits and then kind of has been kind of more of a word of mouth in more recent years. And how did you get into him? Was it just the typical radio hits like Cars?
Or what have you? No, actually. Well, I had heard Cars a fair amount. No, how I got into him is kind of what they mentioned in the documentary was I was heavily into a whack of bands during the mid to late 90s that were starting to name drop them. Nine Inch Nails being the most prevalent of the lot.
That is where I heard of them from, too. And so I've been very personally attached to this man. I started in his later work and then worked up to the classics.
Same here.
Hybrid and Dead Sun Rising and just some more of his more just recent work. Long story short, my grandmother passed away in 2011, and so I listened to a bunch of NIN and Numan, and that actually had a healing effect on me.
That's good to hear.
That's exactly what it is. It can be for anger, it can be for stress, but yeah, I was listening to some of his other ones like New Anger and Outland, but I was mainly listening to Jagged, and recently he had Big Noise Transmission, Splinter, and he was always in my world. He conquered the internet. Savage came out of nowhere in 2017, and he actually had a apocalyptic like music video to accompany it. I'm like, why is this the kind of stuff that's not getting played on MTV? Everything else has to be, you know, auto-tune wrapped and, you know, flashy sexualized pop music. I'm like, this is my kind of jam.
Yeah, in my case, similar to yours in some ways, basically he is being name dropped by a bunch of bands that I liked.
Yeah,
Trent and I was working. And
they love each other. They are brothers from other mothers. They are.
Well, so that's one of the weird things I'm like kind of surprised didn't get mentioned in the documentary, because the documentary follows
you would have thought they could have used some participation or something.
Yeah, but they didn't mention the fact that like one of the people, like I guess when you immigrate to the United States, you have to have like people vouch for you, like, hey, he's not coming here to like pillage and then run away or whatever. And one of the people who wrote like an endorsement letter was Trent Reznor. I've heard Newman talk about it in other interviews before. I'm like, why didn't they even bring that part up? Maybe it got left on the editing room floor, but
maybe they couldn't get him to actually be interviewed. Maybe they didn't have that. They're pretty close, though. I know they've toured together along with Tori Amos and a bunch of other just synthwave gods, you know. I mean, he's industrial, so it made sense that he was with Trent Company, but
yeah. And anytime Nine Inch Nails has been performing in LA in the last like 3 or 4 tour cycles, Newman's usually on that show and whatever show they do in like England, whatever big stadium.
Yeah, he's the surprise featured guest.
Yeah, which in a weird way, it's probably now more like expected and a disappointment if he's not there for those shows.
Oh, I bet. Want my money back. He wasn't there. What do you think it is about his voice that kind of just is a little hypnotizing? Like, it's so different, and yet it's not really a thick English accent like we're typically expecting. And yet, like many of these British artists, he just kind of talks about a lot of the same stuff as Trent, yeah. You know, the fear of growing up, being alone, not knowing how to, you know, get up in the morning, having fever dreams. It's just all this kind of illusions that you get. And yet, kind of like a lot of these guys, they know how to talk about dark stuff without being too dark for their own good, kind of.
Yeah. Vocally, Newman, like the way just to describe Newman's voice or what you would normally associate with, like, terrible descriptions for somebody's voice, like he's very nasally, you can hear it, it's in like the upper nose area a lot of his stuff,
right?
But it works for him so well.
It's not thick like David Bowie, and it's not as abstract as Brian Eno, and
yeah,
he kind of, like, I've seen him compared to Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark and Duran Duran, and it's like, I don't know. When looking at him, he almost reminds me of Talking Heads, you know.
Yeah, physically, definitely. The music comparisons, I can see that with some of his later works. Well, or not later, kind of like,
you would think,
middle
he'd
of the
work
road
with David Byrne, but I don't,
yeah,
know.
Like he had that period where he's talked about it numerous times. He basically does those first three albums, right? The Tubeway Army album,
yeah,
and Replicas and Pleasure Principle. Mm-hmm. And then after that, he starts like kind of chasing the dragon of getting a hit. So it becomes a bit more popular, but also way more generic. That's why, like, from let's see here, basically, from, I would say, from I Assassin, which is in 82,
mm-hmm.
to I would say like probably 92, maybe 91, maybe with Outland, Sacrifice is the one that really comes to mind. Yes. Is where he, like, for lack of a better term, and I think he even mentions it in this movie, is like sort of stops giving a shit about getting a hit and just sort of focuses on the music that he wants to do. And at which point, that's when, like, we see the first resurgence of him, and then kind of goes away for a little bit and then comes back and then kind of goes away for a little bit. It's almost like he has these cycles that work in kind of his favor.
Yeah, I don't know if it's his agents are patient or people just are happy with the results, because they're like, well, something's got to take up the airway. It's not going to make the top 40 or whatever, but it's not going to be in the losing streak to where you're like, man, we didn't fucking sell anything. But yeah, I saw that in 79 after his hit Cars, like he went on a money losing tour, according to AllMusic, after putting on a futuristic stage show. And then, much like the documentary talk about, he's just started indulging in his hobby as an amateur pilot with all this money he was making. And that's,
wouldn't that be nice to have the money to be like, my hobby is owning like old fighter planes and flying them around
to fly. Would you say he's fearless, or he's just not nothing to lose? Because, like, it was just so interesting just seeing him, like, having the courage to buy a new house, make it his own house, and it's kind of And just seeing his interviews with his wife and his family almost kind of reminded me of a mechanic buddy of mine, where it's like they like each other, but just in small doses. You're like, okay, you go, you do you, you go over there, come back when you're ready. Dinner will be here.
In his case, it might be something along those lines. Like, you know, he probably, I imagine at this point, he's not out on the road for like 2 years at a time.
No, but, no. I just mean, it's like, give me 20 minutes, you know, apart, and then last 40 minutes we can be together, you know, watch the kids.
Well, and the weird thing about it, especially for watching that documentary for me a little bit, is like, now all those kids are more or less adults. Like two of them,
they gotta be by now. Yeah.
Oh no, the two of them tour with them. Like are like backing vocalists. Oh, that's
right. That did happen. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what the third's doing, but
go away, Dad. Creeping me out.
But
and that's the other thing too. You know, unlike other people, he doesn't. You know, he might come off as an android, but he doesn't come off as like, you know, a creep, or, you know, even though he's got that kind of beatnik, you know, English version of that haircut, you know.
Yeah, he's definitely kind of like an interesting guy. Like he talks about, you know, part of it is he's, I would say, like he mentions stuff about Asperger's in the documentary and stuff like that. Yeah. He's definitely on like the little bit of the spectrum there. Which you can also, I feel like after I learned that, you can sort of hear that in his music, and not in a bad way, is like, like I said, he kind of does these album cycles where it's almost like he does three albums and they're very similar in sound and in texture and tone. Right. And it's like, it's almost like he's just trying to improve upon them each one. And then the third album is like, okay, I've nailed it.
Yeah,
now let's go on to the next thing.
Yeah, and like you say, if you want to be very, you know, objective on it, you know, I can't think of any that get too repetitive, but there are some where it's like kind of like other bands. It's like, well, that was good, but that wasn't, it was hard, it all kind of blends together. And now by the third to even the fifth, you're now really getting kind of the real him, as opposed to less experimentation. I saw that he worked with a group, the post-rock group Battles, in 2011 on an album called Gloss Drop. His vocals were used in a single called My Machines. And then that was before his 20th album, Splinter. And then recently in 2016, he worked with Jean-Michel Jarry, who is a French composer, on his album Electronica 2, The Heart of Noise. So I am gonna be very curious to seek those out. But
that was
after a 2014 tour.
I think one of the other things that like sort of showed me him a little bit was when Fear Factory covered Cars early 2000s. He does backing vocals on that too. But it's that syndrome of like everybody likes a band and then like they're all talking about him, and I think it's probably helped him a chunk, but I don't, it hasn't like blown him into the stratosphere kind of thing either. Like
exactly. He's out and about, but he's almost kind of like Paul Oakenfold, you know. He's just so respected in the industry, you know. Oakenfold's deal is, you know, he's deaf, but he's but he's just so good at just finding these cycles that everyone adores. And he's picked enough heads, he's gotten it done on time. And I think to your point, he is kind of one of those, he's just so reliable. He can come and do what he wants when he wants. And I do wish he could do maybe some movie or video game soundtracks, but who knows, maybe he doesn't want to do that. Maybe he's, because at the same time, you know, he's become relevant enough, people can still reference some of his other singles. That's enough.
It's one of those things that like I wouldn't be surprised if it happens at some point either. There's enough guys who are kind of the same ilk who are doing it now. Like, you know, it's Clint Mansell from Pop Elite itself is the first one who of like that kind of like genre of music that I can think of, like a modern stuff.
Right, started before he became a movie composer. Yeah.
Yeah. He was doing Popful Eat Itself, which is one of my favorite bands of all time. And then like out of that, you also, then we go to Trent, who's like, he's like, what, missing the Tony from getting an EGOT at this point. Like he just needs to buckle down at some point and do a musical with somebody. And because he's got an Oscar, he's got an Emmy, he's got a Golden Globe. So yeah, it's only the Tony that he's missing at this point.
Pretty much. I feel like Trent is kind of that could be very well it. I like that theory that he's won it for everybody, so no one else really needs to have anything to prove that they're kept alive by him. He's the, you know, the cool kid who's also earned it. It's kind of like when you see some of these other interviews where you see these makeup artists who want to get into directing and win it for, you know, to them, it's a win for their previous industry. I heard an awesome interview with a stuntman named Chris Gann, who's dabbled in acting. And he's like, I want to get an Emmy or Golden Globe because then I'll technically win it for, you know, the stunt guild. I'm like, that's awesome. So people like to cross over and kind of just is like, I represent everybody. I can dedicate it to whoever, but I did it for them.
Yeah, and that's it's not a bad spot to be in either. Like it's one of those things that I can completely see, like, especially given like kind of the textures and soundscapes that Newman does. Video games would be a really good spot for him. I could also see, like, it would depend on the movie, but I could see him doing scores for a film. And then working out after that.
Him. I mean, even original songs that, Peter Gabriel kind of did that briefly and throughout the 80s with movies and games. So, I mean, I could totally see him doing a similar kind of thing. Just it would have to be with an artist he loves. He wouldn't even care where it's featured in, as long as he know, you know, he's well featured on the track. I think to your point, I think he is absolutely, he is all about, you know, after all those various hits that he had with the albums Telecon and Pleasure Principle, like Down in the Park and Metal, and the recent ones from Savage, like End of Things and My Name is Ruin, I think he's all about the brand. And if he looks like a fool, he doesn't want any association with it. You know? Yeah. Just like any actor, you know, it's like good, bad. Am I good in it? You know?
Yeah. He did his, like, you know, like I said, like there was that period there where he was just trying to chase hits. So he's done like his pile of shit, basically, like, you know,
yeah,
like, it's like I did the era where I tried to sell out, except nobody was buying. So now I'm just going to do what I want to do.
I've had my repetitive tracks or ones that weren't remarkable. So I'm past that. I don't want to do this unless we are all in tune, no pun intended, with it. You know, we are ready to go. We got it.
Yeah, it's and his last album, Intruder, is really good. He kind of is not so much repetitive, but refining ideas throughout albums. But the last three albums that he's put out have been really solid all the way through. And when Intruder came along, you kind of knew what you were getting, but at the same time, it was really good. It's like going to a really good place for a hamburger. Yeah, it's a hamburger, but it's a really good hamburger.
Right. It might have all the excess fat and canola oil, but there's something that it's kind of what I equate to, you know, talk show hosts like Conan O'Brien or even shock jocks like, you know, Howard Stern. Is like, they might. Yeah. They're rude, but they're a special kind of rude. People come to them and open up to them because, you know. And you see it all the time. You see people having outrageous, stupid interviews with Conan that are special kind of dumb. And you see people open up to Howard that other people would be like, yeah. But for whatever reason, they trust him. They absolutely.
And then especially in the case of Howard, I'm like, I'm not a big fan of his shock sort of stuff. But once he gets in there, he's a really good interviewer.
That's like, kind of where he's
very skilled. And even now, he's kind of dropped the shock bullshit.
Yeah,
he more or less just gets started in the interview and just goes with it. I just watched one with him and Neil Young.
Very active on social media. I'm surprised he hasn't had Newman or one of these other guys on. But yeah, to your point, that I think he conquered it all. He already did the whole I got to be the first one to piss everybody off and test the FCC. And now that I've done that, I don't have to do it anymore. I've already. I mean, if I were in his shoes, I'd probably get bored doing it too. I'd be like, okay, I pissed everybody off. What's new? I just want to go back to what I do best, which is actually, you know, ask people a question that they actually want to answer because it's not scripted.
Yeah. And like the he, I don't know if it's just him or if it's his team, does really good research. And that's all
part I think of. They do, because you're listening to all these other talk show hosts and even music artists, like to another point, like we were seeing about in the 2010s a lot of comedians coming into town, like Dana Carvey and Ari Spears, and they had photos just like from eons ago, and that was clearly just sloppily copy and pasted from Wikipedia, and it was one of those like, who is their PR, who's their agent? That is a terrible looking poster from with a 20 plus year old, you know, IMDb photo. And same deal with the talk show host. We're seeing some of these other guys, you know, obviously Joe Rogan and now Bill Maher, you have zero idea of how to do any kind of research, and it shows. And then they do the whole, oh, are you getting offended? It's like, because you're asking someone a loaded question and they're a trauma victim, or they're you clearly don't know why you even
do the work.
If I don't do the work, I'm gonna fess up.
I went to school for broadcasting, so I like,
yeah, it will show.
And the guy who, like, the teacher that was in charge of teaching us how to do news was like your old school news guy. Like, he was, his name was Robert Holliday. I think he's in the Canadian Broadcast Hall of Fame at this point. But
that's
he was like,
see, you yeah, got like God.
You, it was one of those things that, like, he only ever used your last name, but if he used your first name, you knew you had like gotten a 90. Like, if he said your first name is like, that's an A, I did something really good.
Brent, you've done it again. Yeah.
Yeah, that didn't happen very often.
But still, but, cool to actually pick someone like that's brain who you actually respected. Yeah. And when you see that they had an accolades, they're just like, yeah, no, he earned it. I learned a shit ton from him. So I can buy that he earned his keep. And so, yeah, I mean, when I don't do research, I will just flat out say, hey, didn't get a chance to watch this recent movie in their friend, you know, series, but I listened to this commentary track on this filmmaker. I listened to this newest album or EP by this artist.
Yeah,
that's all I'm going to say. I mean, this is like, but I also at the same time, you know, I'm using all music and all these other sources here. I'm not going to go to just Wikipedia where, you know, anyone can delete or omit it. You know?
Yeah, it's Wikipedia is not a bad place to like sort of do basics and then start and then you that are on the article of the interviews and stuff that you're reading about.
1000%. And if it just gets to where you're just like, okay, they probably already read this off that, you know, before you read it off, then they're probably already bored.
I just
want to keep them guessing. It's a good like a backup, like maybe you're going to an individual page, but still try to go to like a third party source. I wish there was an IMDb other than All Music for kind of other music bands. I know there's like Discogs, but that's more of a selling site.
That's more just finding where the albums are and what year they were released.
Yeah,
and how many different versions of that album there are. Like that's it. Like going back to Newman, the album that I start. I don't know if you can actually get the version that I had anymore, because
probably not.
It's for the most part it's called Sacrifice. The version I got, I was working at a comic shop at the time, and they got them is called Dawn, because the record company in the U.S. tied it into a comic book that was coming out at the time.
Oh, sweet!
So like all the tracks are the same. But I think the track listing is different and the cover art is way different, because the cover art is like based on the comic book that it was tied into. So
that's wild.
That's what once I got that album, I started falling afterwards. Like I also have like a bunch of live bootlegs kicking around somewhere, and I got into it pretty deep there for a while.
I miss those days when comic book shops actually had other media that they sold, you know, in addition to what it is now, where you got to actually make it clear what kind of a panel or convention it is.
Yeah. Well, I now work at one again, is my full-time day job working at one.
Oh, sweet.
In my neighborhood. Yeah. It's great. Honestly, it's completely switched careers, and it was like a little worrisome at the time, but like it's working out very well. But like a lot of it has changed since the first round that I did. Like we're strictly like comics and trading card games and graphic novels and stuff like that, where it's, you will not see a CD or a tape or anything like that being sold at our store.
No, it's gone now, guys.
Yeah.
Are there any, have you ever been tempted to put on a few records or movies?
Like while I'm working?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. The nice thing is the owner of the store is a huge music lover. Yeah, so as much as I may gripe about certain things about streaming services, one of the nice things about Spotify is it makes for a much better music experience in a retail setting, because you have like tons of albums that you have access to. And so it's not like, it would not be unusual to, other than this time of year, because we are in as we're recording this, it's the Christmas season.
Right.
So it's Christmas music, but in my store, the Christmas music is stuff that we pick, including the main thing that's been rotating is James Brown's Christmas album. I think it's called Funky Christmas.
Sweet.
Santa Goes Straight to the Ghetto, I didn't believe, is one of the songs on it. It's actually not a bad Christmas album. My only complaint is it's a little short.
It could use a little more peppiness. Nice, nice. Well, hopefully you can put on Newman sometime.
This is like algorithm.
Probably. You can probably see how many brains you can pick when you put on an obscure or cult album on.
It happens every once in a while. Or
Junior High when that came out.
Yeah. The other thing you'll see is people stop and like cock their head towards, because the speakers are up above, and just sort of like, what is that? Like, and to be fair, I did that this morning. I was working away, and on playlists on Spotify, after you end the playlist or the album, the algorithm takes over and starts feeding you music.
Bingo.
That you thinks you might like. And then I was just like putting some boxes away or something, and it's DMX doing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and I just started laughing.
Yeah.
My boss comes out, and he's like, what are you laughing at? I'm like, is this DMX? And he's like, it is. So that has now been added to our Christmas playlist for the rest of the season.
Oh my goodness. Oh man. So this was badass, and you've been, speaking of comics, that's what True North Nerds does. You've tackled everything from the Old Guard and Star Trek Lower Decks to the newest Transformers, He-Man, Star Wars, and Marvel news, and
yep,
recaps of episodes. What else do you guys have coming up on your podcast?
So we release episodes every 2 weeks of the main podcast. We do have like some satellite shows that are also on our feed. In terms of what we're covering, right now we're in a little bit of a quiet period, because there's not a heck of a lot coming out, because Avatar, Avatar is just like staving off everybody away for the moment. But there is like the next cycle of Marvel movies will be starting late February, I guess, and along with Shazam is in there somewhere too. So we'll be covering that sort of stuff. We're we always make plans. The biggest convention in Canada, which is also, I think it's the third largest in North America at this point, Fan Expo in August. I host panels at the show, so we try and go in and do interviews and things like that when we're at the convention. So
yep.
Nothing like it, because right now nothing is really solidified of what's coming up next, other than like our regular shtick, for lack of a better term, you know, cover what's going on in the nerd news and what movies are coming out and things like that.
Well, I applaud you guys, because you've done everything from discuss what festivals you wanted to see, even just underseen comic book movies that not everyone saw, even stuff on Netflix that was kind of a thing for a minute, and then it still didn't really exactly take off, like the Dark Crystal show. So
yeah, that, which was a little bit of a shame, that because it was a pretty decent show, but it was also super expensive. So yeah. That's what happens when you go old school and use puppets and real props. It jacks your price up a little bit. But
it seems like everybody also wants to go in on that. Like, they care everything about studios making money's back. It's like, I don't know why they care unless they're the investor. Just enjoy it. Let them
yeah,
know.
Hey. That's the Batgirl thing is the one that like always like still puzzles me to this day.
It's yeah,
like, you made the movie, like it's like 90% complete.
Oh, totally. I got into so many different arguments with people who were just like, they were buying into the propaganda, and I was like, okay, so let me look at it from this way. How would you feel if you spent 6 months on that and you had no footage to show? I'd be pretty pissed off. I'd sever ties, because as a videographer, as a makeup or effects guy, you'd be like, dude, I put my some degree of passion and a shit ton of time. Sure, I got paid, but I got nothing to show. How do you respond to that?
Especially like one of the, because it was a team of directors.
Yeah, even if it sucks.
Well, one of them found out at his wedding. Like, or it was either at his wedding or on the way to his wedding.
Yeah,
like, and that's gotta really suck. But to their credit, the two guys who worked on it had done work for Marvel on, I think they had worked on Ms. Marvel and a couple other of the net or the Disney Plus shows. And Kevin Feige was right in there with the tweet of like, oh well, I'm sure you did good work, and like, you know, you're always welcome back here
by people who actually appreciate you. Yeah.
So, but even then, like that, like the guys who were in charge there are in charge there now, so who knows. That's the one good thing slash maddening thing about following this nerd stuff right now, is the landscape, especially when it comes to streaming stuff, is always changing. So we've always got something to talk about.
Totally. Absolutely. And I'm just glad that everyone has found ways to make this all work.
Yeah.
And keep doing what they love and discussing what they love, because there's so many other people who was like, they'll start a podcast and it disappears. I saw a few which I thought were great, and then you look at the feeds ends after like 2018. Like, really? They just did it for fun. They didn't care.
Yeah, the key is flexibility and just keeping it going. And you know, We do it as a hobby. Like, we're not making any money off of our show, but it's not costing us anything at this point either. Like,
exactly.
Our hosting is covered. At this point, we've got enough of a name that when we do conventions, we can usually get in as press. So it's not a bad spot to be in.
Absolutely. And you're welcome back anytime here on this show.
Oh, thanks. I've listened to a couple of the action movie episodes.
Okay, sweet.
At some point, that might be something that you and I should discuss.
Oh, totally. We're going to be doing rankings of a lot of the stuff you discussed. We did some heated Marvel, DC, and even Dark Horse adaptations. And that was really
I want to go. I want to go nerdier than that, dude. I want to go into the Hong Kong action film area.
Oh, totally. Yeah, but you are totally welcome on there for some of those, where we'll be discussing a bunch of those different franchises. We did do one where we were just talking about a lot of the different ones. We were like the actors and filmmakers we associated, you know, people other than just, you know, Chow Yun-fat, Michelle Yeoh, and John Woo. Yeah. Like, we were going deep, deep to where we're like, where can we get that? There's definitely not a Blu-ray, and the DVD is probably, you know, going to cost you $60 on either eBay or Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been on the hunt for a DVD or Blu-ray. Like, the, I know I can order it off the internet at this point, but I know there's a really good Blu-ray out of the UK, but I don't have a region free player, or a region player that can play region B, I guess, is Operation Condor 2, Armor of God, the Jackie Chan flick where.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, I was describing
an undubbed copy, much like Drunken Master or Snake in the Eagle's Shadow. It's going to it's going to cost all arms and legs.
Just well, the regular DVD is out of print. And it was the last time I looked was costing like $100, which I won't pay. But it seems that at least in Canada, it has shown up on Tubi this week.
Really?
So, yeah. I was like, because every once in a while, I'll just do a little search and see if it's popped up on any of the services. And it showed up in my search on Tubi. But the only weird thing was, is when I clicked on it, the title suddenly switched to Spanish. So I don't know if it's like the Spanish dub of the movie or.
I mean, yeah, they're much like Plex has allowed a lot of people to manually upload stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some other rough edits in there where you're like, hey, this is what you get for watching it for free.
Yeah.
If you're not going to go the physical route, and if you're going to be picky about what are you seeing it on a 2K versus 4K versus just DVD or bootleg VHS, you know, that was imported back in the 90s, you know.
Yeah, luckily there's companies like Shout Factory is a good one, Arrow Video is the other.
And they always give full disclosures like, hey, you know, weren't able to secure interviews with this person, couldn't get the TV edit of this popular, you know, R-rated movie, couldn't get a Blu-ray transformation because all the elements are destroyed, but at least you got updated, you know, release and features and more organized, you know, set with a cool cover.
Yeah, or like the case of Vinegar Syndrome. Have you seen the New York Ninja?
We'll return after these messages.
Hello and welcome to Culture Shocked, the pop culture podcast brought to you by four aging millennials and our outdated opinions. Join us every Tuesday as we discuss movies, TV, games, and even music, new and old.
Dude, what do you think you're doing?
Are you seriously trying to record a promo without us right now?
Well, yeah.
Dude, you can't just do the promo by yourself. Who's gonna listen to that?
Yeah, and you probably haven't even told them that we're a pop culture podcast where we always agree on everything. For instance, the Sam Raimi trilogy easily being the best of the Spider-Man movies.
No. But I think we can all agree that Jaws is a classical masterpiece.
Nope, don't like that. But we do all agree that the sequel trilogy of Star Wars is the best in the Skywalker saga, right, guys?
That comment is so ridiculous. I don't even know where to
Anyways, that'll do it from all of us here at Culture Shock. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Oh yeah, the one where they I've heard about this one where it's like they dubbed it.
It's like the ultimate film school project in a lot of ways.
Yeah, they had the dialogue cut.
Yeah, well, they had the film, but they didn't have the soundtrack to it.
Right, element like one
the, lost. The vocal, that element was lost, and they didn't have a script to work off of either. So, they ended up finding a version of the script and then just sort of pieced it together. But they realized after they got like X amount that like there's no ending to the movie either. Like it hadn't been shot, or they were waiting to get it shot, or had ran out of budget. So they had to figure out how to piece together an ending with what they had.
And then the line begins to blur even more, where you're just like, would you consider them, you know, this a 2020 movie or 1985 movie?
Yeah.
Much like some of those Mario Bava movies, is like it technically didn't get finished until 40 plus years later.
Yeah, I want to say it like in their case, what, because the guy who put it together, what did he call it?
Like a fan film.
He came up with a term, like a word that he would end up using for it, because he sort of ended up being like, you know, like he was the editor, he was sort of like the screenwriter for the dialogue, and like for a movie that had already been finished, it's worth having a watch. It wasn't a great movie in the first place, and the New York Ninja as it stands now isn't an amazing movie, but on a whole, it's like it's an interesting thing to see
because
of everything that went into it.
Much like kind of The Room, it's just kind of that point where you're just like, hey, you know, someone actually cared about this, and because the love is bigger than the otherwise generic storyline, you know, it just still speaks louder than usual, and it is totally gonna be a fan movie where you're just like, hey, you know, because they're all here in the same room enjoying it with us, you know, it means so much more than anything else.
Yeah, there's a ton of movies like that, but
Totally, it's just, and it's a rarity too, but now people are just kind of more, they're just opening up about all the stuff that they previously just, you know, it was a word of mouth kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's kind of one of the nice things about the internet, is it has passed on stuff like that, or stuff gets rediscovered, or become like, without the internet, I would have never heard of The Miami Connection, which is my favorite terrible movie of all time.
Yeah, some big intense stuff there. And Like to your point earlier, it is one of those where it's just like, hey, people are tired of all the toxic fans attacking each other. You know, people just want to actually laugh and figure out why all these years they've enjoyed watching these crazy movies.
Agreed.
And I'm just glad that I could have you on here, new BFF, but also it's just, you know, these kind of eye-opening chats, they sit with you. You remember them, and just like any good conversation or interview, because I think that's what a lot of people are just, it's lost on. They just want to either bullshit way too long or just be like, you know, I'm done with this. You know,
yeah.
Too much negative association with it. And that's not saying you can't have a negative review of a movie. Trust me, there's going to be plenty of it. But if it really doesn't represent anything at the end of the day, does it stay with you? Really? Probably not.
Yeah, exactly. I've often said one of the worst things a movie, especially a movie, can be is mediocre. Like if it's absolutely terrible, or if it's great, that's one thing. But if it's mediocre, like, it just goes in and then just goes directly out. Like, you just vaguely remember that you saw it and it was like, oh, well, that was a movie, I guess. Like, it wasn't awful, but there's nothing really memorable about it either.
Mm-hmm. Funny how that works.
Yeah.
Well, this was a treat, and I hope you get plenty of other goodies coming your way for holiday season.
Oh, thank you very much. You too. I guess we're only a couple days out.
Yeah, even then, you know, we can't expect them to all be the following week, but for those who are listening now, at least we know, hey, we had a fun get together. That's the other wild thing too, is people just need to fess up instead of saying, yeah, we totally didn't record five of these back to back, even though we totally did.
Yeah, so with our show, we tend to be, as of late, it's recording kind of last minute, because we put up shows every second Monday, basically, and just because of our schedules and stuff. But right now, our schedules are even tighter, and like, one of our hosts, and this isn't giving anything away, but one of our hosts is a Santa, like, that's his side gig for the month of December. So, nice. Yeah, and he takes it fairly seriously, but like every once in a while, there's like, December, we just assume Kevin's not on the show. If he can appear, that's good, but if not, he is out being Santa at some Christmas party or some like event or some corporate Christmas thing. He just learned to roll with it and change with the whatever's coming with the times.
Oh, they go with the flow.
Yeah.
Well, badass to you. Hope, again, you know, just hope work is uneventful and you have some other fun stories to share.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me.
Anytime, anytime.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.